Worker power is essential to ending poverty in America.
Matthew Desmond, we thank you so much for being with us and for your book, Poverty by America. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Are you ready for your order?
Yes, I'll have the college radio station with the hand-picked music, fresh interviews, and let's get a side of locally grown events.
Sure thing.
Oh, you know what? Make that 24/7.
No problem, you got it.
Oh, and that doesn't come with any advertisements, does it? I'm deathly allergic.
It's actually 100% ad-free.
Perfect. How much?
It's actually free.
Free? What? How?
It's brought to you by listeners just like you.
How do I help?
You could donate by calling 631-632-6901 or by going on www.wusb.fm.
I'm going to leave a fat tip.
And that is true. You can go to WUSB.FM right now and pledge. Pledge whatever you can, or you can call 631-632-6901. Either speak with the friendly representative who picks up, or leave a voicemail message and be called back. It's all to keep WUSB on the air as we continue our improvements, our recovery, and our programming. 631-632-6901, WUSB.FM. WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, time for another edition of Off the Wall. very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Over here, yes.
How you doing?
Pretty well. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. Had a bit of an adventure this past week. I've got news. I think a lot of people don't even know this, but there is a cannabis dispensary on Long Island. Yeah, there is. A legal cannabis dispensary is on Long Island. The reason you probably haven't heard about it is because it's on a reservation. Yeah, it's on the Shinnecock Reservation out in Southampton. And we went out there just to check it out because this is history. We've checked out a couple in the city. Now there's one on Long Island, out east. And boy, it was different. It was very, very different. So low key. Matter of fact, it's like you're just walking into a convenience store. A very small convenience store. In fact, we were the only people in there. None of the stress or security or ID checks or any of that. And you know what else? No New York State tax because it's on a Native American reservation. So, boy, that's a whole different aspect of the whole thing. Now, Kyle, you know a lot more about the actual products that they're selling out there. How does it compare to New York? The city is.
Well, that's the interesting thing. The distinctions really are that there are tribal growers and there's different selection. And of course, and even down to labeling and packaging, I mean, it's very similar, but a little bit distinct. And I enjoyed just checking it out, supporting the cause, seeing how it's done there, and noticing what's going on in the area. There is another larger facility that's also under construction, and I drove by there and we saw that.
Yeah, that's really a more official reservation.
It's been a longer term project.
This is a small one, but there's a huge
correct.
One being built.
Correct. Yeah, and I believe they're even going to have their own house brand cannabis product that is grown on their farms. But there are other grow operations. It's not something that's as public, much in the same way that the state system works. You only really find out about the different growers until you go and see what the retail stores are offering. But it was much the same. And I'd say a little bit better quality, different ways of describing their commitment to it, but and even more, like, I think selling points for me were potency and different flavors, but also the commitment to, like, not having any kind of processing, you know, sun grown, having a lot of heart and pride and love that goes into it, but just that natural process and smaller operations, not really, really big commercial operations. So in that way, there was just like a ton of different things to look at and familiarize yourself with, and mm-hmm. it's just emerging, I think, as something that is more public. They are on a different trajectory. They're not a part of the state system in the same way, but it's cool that it is being considered. It should be foremost. So I don't know. And I just heard all these reviews too. There was a lot of just positive reaction in what I was reading up on, and there's been a little bit of press, some updates about that larger building that's going to be more of like a cultural hub for this.
But surprisingly little fanfare. You know, you can find it in the media. It was very hard to find it in real life because the address was sort of open to interpretation. But once you did, okay, this is real, and it's not a big deal at all.
Yeah, they're definitely getting some promotion out there, getting the word out. I think maybe in the strategic ways and in farther afield to really share the story more widely, maybe to get mm-hmm. interest from people that might end up visiting or a part of the tourism for Long Island and anybody that might be coming into the area for other reasons to be aware of this as well as other activities that are on tribal lands here in New York.
Well, it's I guess just a part of the transition where we're seeing this become part of our culture. And very soon in Brookhaven Town, where Stony Brook is, you'll see something here. And it won't be Native American run, but it should be something that is historic, because there has never been a dispensary on Long Island before. This is history that we experience, but it's going to spread around Suffolk County, not Nassau County, because all of Nassau County opted out like idiots, as did a bunch of Suffolk County towns. But I think they're going to see the success. They're going to see how these places certainly don't cause crime or drug use or anything like that. If anything, it makes it safer because it's restricted. It's run professionally. There are standards. Things aren't done in back alleys. Kids are kept out. So we'll see.
Yeah. And there's every day stories about it. We were hearing about, I think, or reporting on some of the licenses for the island that were being issued. News about that is occurring continuously. And there's big attractions. I know there's something going on in the city, this THC NYC facility. It's like a big building that's full of kind of more touristy and just celebrating and interactive installations and so forth. So there's a lot going on, of course, here in April because of Earth Day.
420. Yeah, okay. Call it that if you want. But yeah, it's good. It's really positive, and glad we were a part of that, and we're able to see something good on Long Island. You have to. Well, I mean, there's lots of good things on Long Island, but boy, there are some things that really get me frustrated and upset.
Well, and the innovation emerges when it is accepted. It's widely understood. The issues like packaging that we've described, those things are being met, and maybe some of the ways the money is being spent. Let's see some of the results there. That would be interesting as far as taxing. But that is only going to occur once the official market is there, and people can try different things, have different spaces and activities around this whole culture.
Yeah. Well, there's more Native American news to report. Actually, this just happened today. The New York State Board of Regents has voted unanimously to ban the use of Native American mascots, team names, and logos in public schools. That was during today's morning session in Albany. And that move can affect, or will affect, at least a dozen Long Island school districts. And as you can imagine, the usual crowd is up in arms about this. This has been rumored for quite some time that this was going to be happening, and we have some school districts around here. Compsawag comes to mind in Port Jefferson Station, I believe. I'm going to go through some of the feedback that we've been seeing.
Before you do, I mean, this is part of a larger trend in understanding the underpinnings of our own historical emergence as a country, and the ways Native names and identifications of certain areas were integrated into the naming in a modern sense of different areas. And this has been an issue in state parks and so forth, as well as on military bases. There was an initiative to change some of the names. And so on and so forth. There's various terms that were used in past names of things. I know that that are now not being used, and they've been making those kinds of changes, as well as all the stuff with sports teams, with mascots and so on and so forth. So it's not something that is just emerged out of nowhere, but it sure seems it's like it's about time. So sure, okay. What's their issue? Please, now that I've been supportive
it's,
here.
A lot of it has to do with cost, and it could exceed $400,000 per district. That's according to the executive director of high school sports in Nassau County. Some districts have imagery on multiple turf fields, hardwood courts. You have to repaint and revarnish things. this person, Pat Pizzarelli, says it's a big deal. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars. When I was athletic director at Lawrence District, we didn't have logos on all of our uniforms, but some schools do. They'll have to get all new uniforms. If you have multiple synthetic fields and you have that logo at the center of the field or in the end zone, that all has to come out. Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but
good point.
Nobody told you to do that. John Dolan, who retired in January after 7 years as the East Islip superintendent, said the district started to phase out the Native American imagery around the district 3 years ago. We had already changed windscreens and other logos around the school to start the process. One change was to promote East Islip with our message of welcome to East Islip, home of EI Pride. The branding in our new athletic facility sends a positive message. Absolutely. There are other people, such as Joseph Kennedy, a retired MTA worker who put four children through the Syosset school system, has been particularly vocal about keeping the Braves mascot. Get ready for this. I'm of Irish heritage. I'm not upset that Notre Dame is the Fighting Irish. I don't consider that pejorative. Can anyone think of a difference between the way Irish were treated in this country and the way Native Americans were? Anyone? Not quite the same. I mean, yeah, there was oppression of Irish people, but it wasn't annihilation. You know, it wasn't wiping out a culture. Anyway, he continues because people like this continue. Braves makes me think that the team has a tradition of bravery, of highly skilled athletes. I don't associate anything negative with that. I think people need to be bothered by other things than what a team name is called, as long as it doesn't denigrate a particular ethnic group. Well, why don't you ask the people? Okay, why don't you actually check in with them? See if it's okay with them. Because you have all these people going around saying, it's not offensive. I don't find it offensive. Of course, you don't find it offensive. The people that are basically being labeled by you, maybe they find it offensive. You know, like Washington Redskins. One day we're going to look back at that team and say, wow, how did they ever get away with that name? You know? The Cleveland Indians. Do you remember that? The Cleveland Indians, no longer a team. Cleveland Guardians, right? Is that what they call them? I'm not sure. I think it's the Guardians.
Washington Guardians.
No, it's the Washington.
Cleveland.
What's the Washington team called? Yeah, we don't follow.
It's going to take a couple of years. It'll take generations.
We wouldn't have known anyway because we just don't follow the teams.
That's true.
But whatever it is, look, believe me, the fans know what it's called. It's an easy transition. It really is.
And it's a truth of the underpinnings of society that seeps its way in. And it's no wonder that it ended up that way. But how the self-awareness wasn't there collectively is another story. And that's probably worth plenty of reflection as a society.
Schools that don't comply will be in violation of the Dignity for All Students Act and risk being denied state aid. And school officials in those districts could lose their jobs. That's according to a November memo from State Education Department Senior Deputy Commissioner James Baldwin, which also gave schools until the end of the current school year to comply. Further guidance released last December gave schools until the end of the 2024-25 school year to remove all imagery.
All right. So, well, you don't have to have a solution right away.
Mm-hmm.
You do it in phases. You make an announcement. You phase it out as that one example was indicating. And if it's in the middle of a field, you cut that out and you just do it green. Mm-hmm. Nothing until you come up with a new graphic or you have the money to put in a new design. But removing it and having an interim period is not necessarily the worst thing in the world either, if it's a matter of cost and getting to a full replacement of something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, just hire a bunch of workers for nothing and have them go to the field and remove the offensive logo.
Or wait for
that way you're still committing a hate crime. You know, because I think that's the difficulty. People just really want to be offensive somehow. But here's the thing. Okay, I was saying, let's talk to Native Americans about this. Public schools may ask for a written exemption from local federally recognized tribes, which on Long Island are the Shinnecock.
That's cool.
Shinnecock Indian Nation Chairman Brian Polite says, no, we're not going to be doing that. so they're not really believing what these people are saying about it not being offensive. And if they're not convinced, you got to take that seriously.
Yeah. I mean, working with the tribes and talking, consulting is worthwhile. And if it's a no-go, obviously then I think that you need a plan for some alterations to it.
So Polite says there are better ways to honor the natives. You can incorporate curriculum of the local tribes in your school. You can have us come and do cultural days. Mascots that are pretty much negative representations of the natives is hurtful. That should be it. That should be enough right there. You shouldn't even need the state to step in. Hearing that should be enough. But you want more? Fine. Chief Harry Wallace of the Uncochog Indian Nation near Mastic, which is a state-recognized tribe, has fought against the use of indigenous mascots since he was an undergraduate at Dartmouth College. And said that indigenous children grow up with an image that is false and that is negative, no matter how much quote-unquote positive pride you have with that. That's a negative projection of the way a native kid looks at himself and the way a non-native kid looks at him.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you really need to hear more? You know, it's an invalid tradition based on the denigration of a separate people. You should not be a participant of that. There are a lot of different ways you can demonstrate pride, integrity, and tradition in your athletics teams and your school without having to insult and desecrate human people. Because that's what they are. They are people. The act is aimed at protecting students from harassment and discrimination. State law allows the education commissioner to withhold public money or remove a school officer who willfully disobeys an order or rule of the Board of Regents.
Got it.
Yeah. So, again, that happened today. There's it was unanimous. Districts must make a formal commitment to adhere to the rule by the end of this school year. And as I said, have until the end of the 2024-25 school year to remove all such references from uniform scoreboards, fields, and buildings on school property.
So that is the phase-out plan right there.
Right there, yeah.
So plan accordingly.
So, you know, I saw this story appear on the local online paper, The Patch. The Port Jefferson Patch is the local one. You might as well call it the Klan Rallying Point. I mean, seriously, the reason I say that, it's not because of the stories that are written. They attempt to report stories. But what they also do is leave the door open for every racist idiot to post whatever they want. And you just better believe, no matter what it is, no matter what the story is, you're going to get this outlash of hate. So there was a story posted earlier today. New York Board of Regents bans Native American mascots at schools. And let's take a look at a couple of the comments. I'm just going to go through a couple of them. I can't stomach very more of them, but they're pouring in. They're just pouring in. First person says, stupid, exclamation point. Okay, you know what? That's not so bad. Fine. You disagree, Vinny? That's your prerogative. Pat Weiss from West Hampton says, they are a collection of woke morons. All right, that's what Native American people are, woke morons. They don't want to be insulted and desecrated. Big Frank from the Bronx says, we do celebrate Native American heritage. Do you want to play for a team named the Starbucks Baristas or the Warriors? Yeah, Frank, you know, I think it's a little more complicated than that.
I think it would be.
If you had a bit of imagination, you'd come up with a better name.
Yeah, it would be the Starbucks Sirens.
Why does that have to be Starbucks at all? I can't. They're just insulting each other, right? Even though they agree, they're insulting each other. My school district's mascot is a bulldog. I guess the ASPCA and woke dog lovers will come for these mascots next. Yeah, because Native American people are just like dogs. Yeah, that's what you're saying here. What an idiot. What a complete moron. Whom has to incur the cost of all the required changes? Oh, yes, good old New York taxpayers. Thanks for doing such important work that was on everyone's mind on a daily basis. You're welcome. But maybe next time you'll think twice before naming a team after a group of people without their consent. You know, maybe, yeah. This person did their own research. Dave from Merrick said, I actually asked some Native American Indians when at two of the reservations in Mastic. They could care less were their answers. Well, I guess we need to trust Dave over what the people are saying themselves and being quoted in newspapers.
What a relief that he checked.
And here's how they twist it. Mikey from Massapequa, you'll be advocating changing all of the Indian town names next. Let's make believe no Indians ever lived here. So what he's referring to are, you know, places like Setauket, Patchogue, Cutchogue, all these Native American names, and saying that, yeah, they're going to change the names of towns, which is not on the agenda. But by doing so, you're trying to erase them. No, they've already been erased. They've already been massacred. You know, it's the last
vestige of them having been there.
Right. So if you were having mascots with a tribal dress and all sorts of other things and nicknames and things like that, there might be a conversation to be had there. But nobody is talking about getting rid of town names or village names or anything like that. And I doubt very much, Mikey, you care a bit about preserving Native American culture. I really, really doubt that, just based on this kind of a reaction.
But maybe if a bit more of it had been preserved, he'd be more keen and interested to preserve it, because he'd have an appreciation based on that preservation. Who knows? World works in amazing ways.
And this is really picking up. Yeah. Like, while we're at it, we need to change our town names. Ronkonkoma, Cutchogue, Montauk, Setauket, Massapequa should all be erased. To misappropriate these names as towns is just wrong. We should let these names and the influence Native Americans have on Long Island be tucked away and mentioned only in approved places, such as history books that no one will ever read. Swing and a miss, man. You could not get it more wrong. This is from Neighbor in Sachem. That is not at all what this is about.
I think that was an attempt at sarcasm.
Yeah, it's a poor attempt at sarcasm. As a gardener, I'm offended by the name Garden City. This is the kind of idiocy. Okay, I'm going to stop reading this now. I'm just getting more and more upset. But yeah, Comstawag is one of the local school districts that is affected by this. And there has been some outcry from the local people saying, how dare you tell us to change our team mascot? Change your damn mascot, okay? So it's not offensive to particular groups. How hard is this? Yeah, it's going to cost some money. You know, everything costs money. You should be doing this willingly. You shouldn't need a state law to tell you to do it. It's embarrassing. And, you know, sticking with Comstawag for a second, they were in the news for another reason. And this was a really weird reason. I saw this story again in the aforementioned online newspaper, The Patch, saying there was a pronoun lawsuit at this school in Port Jefferson. I'm going to read the story so that maybe we can figure it out together. Two opposing protests took place outside of Port Jefferson Station Elementary School a couple of weeks ago after a lawsuit claimed a teacher forced a fifth grade girl to use male pronouns against her will. And that sentence is really all that was needed for everything to go ballistic and for this story to spread. If you look online, you'll see the New York Post with that same headline. Teachers are forcing students to use inappropriate pronouns. And it just was the weirdest thing I had ever read. I couldn't figure out a situation where that would happen. The lawsuit filed against Brookhaven Comstawag Union School District claims that due to the teacher's treatment, the girl was bullied and expressed suicidal feelings. Moms for Liberty, which claims to advocate for parental rights in schools, protested outside the district's Board of Education meeting that the teacher should be fired and that the girl was being groomed and indoctrinated by them. And they quoted News 12 on that.
People are so nosy.
LGBT Network, which advocates for LGBTQ rights on Long Island, objected to the group, saying that the teacher did the right thing. Okay, but there's nothing in the story that explains what the hell happened, you know? And I went to the News 12 story, and it didn't really say much else at all, except, you know, no comment from parties involved. And basically a lot of quotes from Moms for Liberty. The supporters of their cause say the child was being groomed and indoctrinated by her teacher. They say the topic of sexual and gender identity does not belong in elementary school, and the teacher named in the lawsuit should be fired. The other group of protesters were led by the LGBTQ network. They say the teacher did everything right and should be supported. They're the ones indoctrinating our kids and our communities with hate, and that is not okay, and we're not going to allow it, said David Kilnick of the LGBT network. Not in our town, not on our Long Island, not ever. Unfortunately, David, it's all over the place. It's all over the place, and it's spreading. and we really have to speak out more against it. Okay, so what is it that actually happened? Now, can you imagine a scenario where you're going to school and your teacher insists that you be identified as he when you're a girl? Can you, why would that happen? It makes absolutely no sense. And I searched in vain everywhere for the actual story as to what happened. It took talking to somebody locally to hear the actual facts, or what I believe are the actual facts, because again, I don't have firsthand knowledge, but I have, you know, enough to get a sense now as to what they're trying to say in these stories. And apparently what unfolded was that the girl, in fact, did identify as male, or wanted to identify as male, but was afraid to tell her parents. So what the teacher said, and this kind of makes sense, what the LGBT network was saying, that they can identify with what they're comfortable with. If they're comfortable identifying as male, fine, not a problem. You can do that in this classroom, in this school. And she was afraid to tell her parents, understandable. I could certainly see that. But apparently the parents found out and are accusing the teacher of grooming the kid, when in fact the teacher was simply supporting the kid and giving the kid some safety and ability to express who they were. And that seems a lot more likely as to what actually happened with this story that nobody reported accurately. What's going on in this country and now locally is just completely insane and harmful to kids. Because what does this do to them? You know, now you've thrust this kid into the middle of all this, and attention was probably the last thing they wanted. These people don't care.
I don't know where they found out. I think there's probably a lot of this was parents hearing this secondhand from kids hearing about it at sure. school, like that kind of way. When in fact it was really sensitive that it not be something that was out and so forth, as in so far as honoring the authority that the teacher has to listen to what their students say in confidence and protect them, especially if the family might have this kind of reaction, which is exactly what happened when it spread. Maybe, you know, no thanks to Moms for Liberty, who may have been getting it secondhand.
Jumped on it like jackals.
Oh, yeah.
They really did. And, you know, what is the kid going to say now? The kid lives with these people. Of course, if they have to say anything, they're going to say what they're told to say. Talk about being groomed. This is what they were trying to get away from. This is what they were trying to escape from. Again, you know, I don't have firsthand knowledge of this. This is what I'm hearing from the community, as opposed to what these detached newspapers and reporters were saying without going the furthest, because the story made no sense the way it was being reported. It made absolutely no sense, and nobody was trying to report it properly.
It's inconsiderate media framing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, whose side is being told necessarily.
So the narrative is that teachers are forcibly telling students to identify as sexes that they are not, and grooming them for, what are they grooming them for exactly? Well, what is the advantage here from doing this?
Beyond the insult to the wishes mm-hmm. of this young person not being taken to heart, by adults, this is a real insult and an episode of disempowerment to teachers as authorities mm-hmm. to have that trust to care for and help young people grow, and especially in cases where home life might not be so good. For a young person, where school is a refuge. That exists. And this concept that parents are always right,
mm-hmm.
it's with this kind of like ganging up,
right,
is pretty ironic.
And, you know, I've heard many good things about the Comstock District, so I would put my money on them. Despite the Native American mascot, which I'm sure they'll figure out, it's the community I'm worried about. It's the ignorant people protesting and being outraged at school board meetings. It's not the district. I'm sure they will get it right, and I'm sure that at some point, reason will prevail. It's not prevailing right now, but hopefully it will prevail at some point. So yeah, that's local. Let's go national, because it's got to be better than local. No, it's not. We heard the case of Ralph Yarl, the 16-year-old kid, who made the mistake of knocking on Andrew Lester's door. That's it. Oh, and being black, of course. That was also his fault. This 84-year-old guy saw a 16-year-old black kid knocking on his door and shot him through the door. Yeah, just like that. He rang the wrong doorbell. He was looking for his younger brothers. They had a street, like, I think, two blocks away with the same name, except it was Avenue instead of Boulevard. I don't know, something stupid like that. Doesn't matter. You can knock on doors. You can still do that. But this guy was so filled with hate and suspicion that he just shot first, believing he had the right to stand his ground. Because we're so gun-obsessed and filled with hatred that is now the norm.
Well, it's a catch-all for murdering indiscriminately in these people's minds. I think they have a very warped understanding of the nuance and what is exactly, you know, fear for your life, that you know, this is the only thing you can do. I mean, mm-hmm. it is such a warped and pathetic reading of the situation and the law.
And okay, here's the actual street. He went to a home in the 1100 block of Northeast 115th Street instead of Northeast 115th Terrace in Kansas City. And they're very close to each other. So a mistake anybody could make. But this one nearly cost him his life. Somehow he was able to survive a shot to the head. He's out of the hospital now, thank God. But this guy was just completely filled with hatred and suspicion. Obviously, a racial component to the shooting. I don't think this would have happened if he wasn't a black kid. According to Lester's account in the statement, no words were exchanged. He opened fire seconds after opening the door. Yeah, because that's what you do when you see a black kid at your door. No words, just open fire. He stated it was the last thing he wanted to do. It's the only thing you did, though. He was scared to death due to the male's size and Lester's age. Okay, so black people are imposing and provoke fear in people inside their homes. And apparently being 16 makes it even more scary. It's just insane. And, you know, to the police department's credit, they quickly, well, fairly quickly, filed charges, although hate crime is not one of the charges, not yet anyway. But they didn't arrest the guy right away. This is what I don't get. Okay, first of all, they took his statement. He was briefly in custody the night this happened. And while they were figuring it out, I don't know what they had to figure out, but they had to do all kinds of forensics. Fine, they did that. The next day they had a big press conference saying, okay, we're charging this guy. Well, we don't know where he is, though. I mean, aren't you sitting on his house? How inept can you possibly be where you let an 84-year-old guy slip out of your fingers and he turned himself in today? So he got to dictate when, how, where. He turned himself in because he wasn't actually taken into custody. He faces two felony charges, assault in the first degree, armed criminal action in the April 13th shooting of Ralph Yarl. It's disgusting to see this kind of thing happen. And you have to ask yourself, where does all this hatred and suspicion come from? And I think you just have to turn on the TV to find out, you know? I mean, words have consequences. So when you're telling people that crime is on the increase and people are being killed for no reason, and these things are demonstrably false. For instance, there was Jim Jordan had some crazy hearing in New York City yesterday to talk about crime in New York City. You know, he belongs in D.C. He's a congressperson who belongs in D.C., but he decided to go on the road and target New York City Democrats, apparently. That was the real target of his ridiculous hearing there. And when you actually look at the numbers, crime is higher where he's from in Ohio and in Florida. Crime is going down in New York City. Of course, you hear news reports of crime. You always do. But if you look at the actual numbers, the murder rate is going down significantly. And all kinds of other crimes also going down. Some crimes are going up. But as far as cities go, New York City actually is doing quite well compared to other cities and compared to other states even. But that kind of thing resonates, you know, when you do that and when you keep repeating it over and over again like you do on Fox News. All these angry people retreat into their homes, cradling their guns, waiting for something to happen, convinced something will happen. And in this particular case, all it took was this black kid knocking on his door. Yeah, I'm looking at the story now. This was on CNN. And the headline reads, "The white homeowner accused of shooting a black teen who rang his doorbell turns himself in to face criminal charges." I just noticed they're capitalizing white. Now, I've been noticing this increasingly. We capitalize black, but we haven't been capitalizing white. And of course, that has led to an outcry from some white people who say, why did black people get special treatment capitalizing black, but we can't capitalize white? Okay, you know what? It's not a bad question. It's a fair question. I will give you that. But please listen to the answer. Please understand. I can totally get why you would think that's not fair. Let me read you something from the Columbia Journalism Review. They know a thing about how to speak. unless we believe that anybody involved in education is the enemy. Let's try not to. At the Columbia Journalism Review, we capitalize black and not white when referring to groups in racial, ethnic, or cultural terms. For many people, black reflects a shared sense of identity and community. White carries a different set of meanings. Capitalizing the word in this context risks following the lead of white supremacists. In deciding on a styling, Fusspod grammar, I don't know how to say that word, grammarians? They can be annoying, I know. Adult copy editors generally fall back on a pair of considerations. The first is broad adherence to a general rule, like the Chicago Manual of Styles edict that names of ethnic and national groups are capitalized. The second thing we look for is attestation. In this case, it's instructive to turn not to the largely lily-white mainstream press, nor to the style guides that govern their renderings, but to writers of color and to alternative style books. The Diversity Style Guide, produced by Rachel Canigal, in consultation with some 50 journalists and experts, takes it as a given that black ought to be capitalized. Sarah Glover, a past president of National Association of Black Journalists, wrote in a recent piece for the New York Amsterdam News, a historically black weekly, that capitalizing the B in black should become standard use to describe people, culture, art, and communities. After all, she pointed out, we already capitalize Asian, Hispanic, African-American, and Native American. Another contributor to the Columbia Journalism Review, Alexandria Neeson, said, "I view the term black as both a recognition of an ethnic identity in the States that doesn't rely on hyphenated Americanness and is more accurate than African-American, which suggests recent ties to the continent, and is also transnational and inclusive of our Caribbean and Central/South American siblings. To capitalize black, in her view, is to acknowledge that slavery deliberately stripped people forcibly shipped overseas of all other ethnic national ties." She added, "African American is not wrong, and some prefer it, but if we're going to capitalize Asian and South Asian and indigenous groups that include myriad ethnic identities united by shared race and geography and to some degree culture, then we also have to capitalize black." Now think about this for a second. You know, we can say we have Irish heritage. Okay, but to someone who is black, they've had that stripped away from them. They can't say for sure what country, what region,
what tribe, what family.
That's what makes black different from white. I'm going to try and find a... okay. There was... you watched the show Atlanta.
Right? I do.
There was a Juneteenth episode of that. A woke white husband asked Donald Glover's character what part of the motherland he's from, hazarding a guess that the answer might be southeastern Bantu. And Glover responds dryly, "I don't know. See, the spooky thing called slavery happened and my entire ethnic identity was erased." You see, it's not so simple. White people have it easy or easier. They can say, yeah, I'm Italian. You know, I'm Scandinavian. I'm German. You can point to that and you have documentation. It's very different. It's very different. So that is why. That's why black gets capitalized, white does not. But I'm noticing more and more where white is capitalized, and it's just, it's kind of distressing. And that was on CNN. So I imagine they're getting a lot of pressure. They have to be fair, and it's not fair. It's very different.
Yeah, not a lot has been atoned for since. Mm-hmm. We still struggle with these things because we're not talking about it. We're not addressing these things in academic ways. And it's instead become wedges or emotional or political issues. It's needless. We should be analytical about our history and straightforward in our telling of it to those that will maybe take on the mantle and make their own changes and at least respect others and be considerate and understanding of how this place has come to be for all actors.
Yeah, put yourself in other people's shoes. Think about what others have had to endure. You know, whether it's a black, indigenous, oppressed in one way or another. And then ask yourself, is my life really that bad? Is my entire upbringing affected by that? There are cases where that is true. But here in this country, I think white people have it pretty good. I really do. So I would like to see an end to all the complaining about things that that really, I don't think you've earned the right to complain in this manner. There are plenty of things to complain about. Don't worry about that. Plenty of things, but this ain't one of them.
Yeah, well, spare us for being stereotyped as white.
Now, I want to call attention to another story. You might not have heard about this one. And you know, sadly, I think maybe race played a part in this as well, in a different sense, because all the people involved here seem to be white. So we talked about the case in Kansas City where the kid got shot through the door. But, you know, right here in New York, 20-year-old woman was shot and killed for going down the wrong driveway. Yeah, didn't hear about that.
No, I haven't heard anything.
All right, well, this 20-year-old woman was shot and killed Saturday after she and three other friends in their car accidentally turned into the wrong driveway while looking for her friend's house in upstate New York. The young woman is identified as Kaylin Gillis, struck by gunfire as a man fired two shots from his front porch.
Directly into the vehicle.
One of which hit the vehicle she was in. Washington County Sheriff Jeffrey Murphy said this in a news conference yesterday. The man, 65-year-old Kevin Monahan, has been charged with second-degree murder in connection with her death. The sheriff said it's a very rural area with dirt roads. It's easy to get lost. They drove up this driveway for a very short time, realized their mistake, and were leaving when Mr. Monahan came out and fired two shots. The shooting happened just days after a black teenager in Kansas City was shot twice by a white homeowner. Well, there it is again, the Capitol White, and this is CBS. Like I said, this is happening too much now. People are reacting to the wrong things. Okay, whatever, I'm not going to obsess over it. No words were exchanged. Oh, wait, now we're talking about the other story. CBS, stay with this story. Okay, after the shots were fired in New York, Gillis and the rest of the group drove away from the house in the town of Hebron looking for cell phone coverage, which they didn't have. When they finally got it, they called 911. They were found about 5 miles away from the home in the nearby town of Salem. First responders began administering CPR, but Gillis was ultimately pronounced dead at the scene. Police officers later responded to the home from which shots were fired and found Monahan to be uncooperative. Big surprise. Adding he refused to exit his residence to speak with police. So they had a bit of a standoff. That lasted about an hour. And they eventually took him into custody. And this is sickening because it's another example of somebody filled with hatred and suspicion who views anyone from the outside world as the threat, as somebody who needs to be put down. Who knows, you know, what assumptions he jumped to. Maybe he didn't see that the car was filled with a bunch of local girls. I mean, we're all local from the area. It doesn't matter. This is not a way to act in civilized society, period.
Yeah, like sitting at home waiting for something to happen to grab your gun and go start shooting. It's not the kind of place it is a community that is, I don't know, civil. this is a disease as you've described it before. This fear and people being pumped by satellite full of hyperbole and crazy stories and that are only meant to make them anxious, and the access to this stuff, the putting of property over people. I mean, ultimately, because if he's judging that this vehicle's on his property, that he's protecting his property, he's not in imminent danger.
And they were retreating. They were leaving.
Okay, that's an incredibly important detail. I mean, it is just so absurd because he's not even at the point where there's any hint, any evidence that he is to be confronted in any way and in a threatening manner. It's just that something happened out of his normal routine and his reaction is to come out guns blazing. That is so twisted. Mm-hmm. And your baseline, like, again, you're the threat. All you're doing is protecting what you think might, you know, in your wild paranoid imagination, become a life-threatening situation because you're pumped full of psychometrics and all kinds of crazy targeted media that is riling you up.
It's that whole thing that is the threat. It's getting people pumped up. It's filling them with hatred and garbage statistics and suspicion and all that. It's no wonder you have these people, these angry people in houses all around the country. And we have to do something about that. But first, we have to do something about what's going on right here at WUSB.
You can either call or go on our website, www.wusb.fm.
Wow. Yeah, that's something. I should point out, it's not a hustle. The song is the hustle, but wow, that's awesome. 631-632-6901 is the phone number for Radiothon, for WUSB, to support the station, to keep us on the air, or go to WUSB.fm. It's a website. You know, I did that last week on the air. I filled out the form, and it's very simple. You basically, the first part is to ask for any premiums that you want to have attached to your pledge. And then after that, you get transferred over to the actual fundraising part. You might have to enter your name a second time, no big deal. And then it's done. And you feel great. You've contributed to the station, and we're stronger as a result of it. We are going to have increased power in the next, I would say, month. The transmitter is on its way, and it will be here in a couple of weeks, we're told. 90.1 will reach the places it used to reach, maybe more places as well. 107.3 is going to be improved as well. It's all because of your help. 631-632-6901, WUSB.FM.
Pledge and you'll get more of our interesting freeform radio originating at Stony Brook on Long Island. Check out all of the merchandise and thank you gifts. I think the sweatshirt is a denim this year. I heard another DJ say that. I don't know. You have to verify.
If you go to WUSB.FM, you can see all kinds of descriptions.
There's a lot of fresh stuff like that that could come your way if you pledge. Please, any amount, $5, $10, $15, $25, any amount.
$1,000 even. We would accept that.
You know what? We will.
And we might even end the radiothon if you do that.
We will make an exception.
Yeah.
But you're the exception. You are an exceptional listener. We appreciate every penny that you can find for us. Become a continuing donor. That is especially helpful.
On a completely different note, I would be remiss not to point this out, but New York State is hosting a gun buyback. Yes, it's true. On April 29th, first ever statewide community gun buyback program, April 29th, and on Long Island, it'll be at the Suffolk County Attorney General's office at 300 Motor Parkway, which I believe is in Hopog. Yeah, 300 Motor Parkway in Hopog, April 29th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Hopefully a whole lot of people with guns show up. I don't often say that, but that's hopefully what happens here.
It is not mandatory.
$500 per assault rifle or ghost gun, $150 per handgun. $500 will be given for the first handgun turned in per person. How about that? That's a good deal.
Wow.
$75 for a rifle or shotgun. $25 for a non-working replica, antique, homemade, or 3D printed gun. And there's no limit on the number of firearms an individual can turn in.
And no questions asked.
The guns must be unloaded and placed in a bag or a box as part of an amnesty program. No questions will be asked about the person dropping off the gun.
Especially like if you have a ghost
gun. And they won't be required to show identification. And of course, unlike other states, we will not be donating all the guns to the Boy Scouts. Be destroyed and not used again. And please, people, if you have guns in your home, do something positive on April 29th and make some money at the same time. And hopefully New York State can set an example for some other places.
Maybe bring a bunch of guns and buy a safe with all the money they give you for your other guns,
which hopefully you turn in as well. Okay, we're out of time. I hope people take to heart some of the things we've talked about. And remember that all these all the hatred that you're being issued by certain TV networks and newspapers and online forums, they may turn you into somebody you're not happy being. And it's impossible, or it's certainly something that we should all take a look at and decide if we're on the right side or not. We will be back next week. We'll see you then. Good night. Stay tuned for Finn.
Bye.